Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Welcome to the No Trombone Zone, everybody. But even here, I've got a problem. A stone in my shoe. Two stones, actually. Two problems. One, why are the statues of Christopher Columbus still in Lori Lightfoot's statue jail? I'll tell you why. Who controls the past controls the future, wrote George Orwell in 1984. And who controls the present controls the past. That's why. Columbus is in the leftist prison of offensive statuary, along with Abraham Lincoln and Leif Erikson. Just imagine them, the three of them sitting there for eternity, lonely as hell. Columbus was the great Italian explorer. Or really, was he a Greek from Chios? And either way, he's hated by the drooling Marxist hordes who tear him down. Our guest today is Rehan Ania, longtime City Hall reporter, who wrote a guest column for JohnCastNews.com defending Columbus Day, attacking the hordes that attack Columbus. And we'll talk about it and how we were kids covering City Hall back in the day when Chicago media was strong, back in the day when people actually wore suits to work, even women, not t-shirts, shorts. And that other stone in my shoe, it's that mutual combatant idiocy of George Soros-backed Cook County State's Attorney Kim Fox and some of the Chicago police brass. Because so far in Chicago, 633 people have been murdered. Actually, I think it's like 670-something. In the street gang wars, the most in 25 years, the politicos tell us it's gun violence. But really, that's another way to get around saying what it really is, which is street gang wars. And mutual combatants? Idiocracy. You know, when street gangs shoot at each other, kill each other, it's on video, when cops arrest them, and the state's attorney doesn't charge them with anything, and they're just let go because, well, mutual combatants. And even if you're on the expressways, and gangs start shooting, and your car is in the middle between them, and you're shot in the face or the neck, is it mutual combatants? Yeah, because that's Chicago. Now, there's got to be a better way than just saying mutual combatants, no? I used to call Chicago Bartertown. And you know what? In Bartertown, in the old Mad Max movies, Tina Turner had an idea about mutual combatants. In that movie, she played the character Anti-Entity. And the idea was Thunderdome.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
Now, I don't advocate killing or cruelty, but Thunderdome was logical in a post-apocalyptic dystopian culture in the movie. And who didn't love Tina Turner? Smart, strong, sexy, and cruel Anti-Entity. Because in Thunderdome, unlike Chicago, two men enter, one man leaves. And like the Thunderdome ringmaster explained, fighting leads to warring, and warring will be the death of us all.
Listen on. This is the truth of it. Fighting leads to killing, and killing gets to warring, and that was damn near the death of us all. Look at us now, busted up and everyone talking about hard rain. But we've learned by the dust of them all, Bartertown's learned. Now when men get to fighting, it happens here, and it finishes here. Two men enter, one man leaves.
Two men enter, one man leaves. Two men enter,
It's the death of Chicago. Yes, it is. Now, Chicago could sell tickets to Chicago Dome, Chicago Thunderdome, live stream it all, raise revenue. Better than sticking it to poor people with those dreadful red light cameras. You get stuck with tickets going 6 miles an hour over the limit. Thanks, Lori. Call it what you want. Mutual combatants in 2021 or Thunderdome in Bartertown. And you know what? It still comes to the same thing. Before the leftist trolls that get sweaty palms listening to me get too excited, think of that. That is just some spaghetti I threw on the wall. Because it's Columbus Day. So how about a tarantella for Columbus Day with Columbus's statue in Lori Lightfoot's prison? How did my family celebrate Columbus Day? Well, if you know about Columbus, we went out for great Indian food at Kama Bistro in LaGrange. I had the ghost pepper lamb shank, level 2 spicy. Betty had the prawns. The boys had curry, their things. We had some great appetizers. And why? Because Columbus thought he was going to India and discovered America instead. And then we went on to that great James Bond movie, and I'm not going to spoil it. So Ray Hanania is here, and Jeff Carlin, my friend, co-host, and executive producer at WGN Radio is here. And if you like what you hear here, know that Jeff, the best producer in Chicago radio, has made it so. And here we are, in the blue belly of the beast. From a dying city, from a thoroughly corrupt Cook County, from the worst governed state in the nation. Columbus thought he was going to India, but discovered America instead, like I told you. And so where are you? With Ray Hanania here to defend Columbus and to talk about Chicago's news media and covering City Hall back in the day with me. You're in the no chumbalone zone with Columbus in jail on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
Welcome to another edition of Thunderdome!
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Well, as promised, our guest is Ray Hanania, columnist, reporter, and author of a new column, a guest column on johncastnews.com called Columbus Day. Is Columbus Day is democracy and a challenge to the tyranny we face? And as we record this, I'd just like to note that this is Columbus Day as we record this, and I'm wondering, when you start the Columbus Day statue parade, Ray, if there is one, do you start at the place where the empty statue used to be? Where's the statue?
Listen, the Columbus Day Parade always was one of the biggest parades outside of the St. Patrick's Day Parade for political coverage. Although you remember, we would follow the mayor, not because we expected a big story, but we always were prepared for tragedy. That's what Harry Golden would say. He goes, you got to cover the parade just in case something happens. I go, okay.
I think the safest guy in the world during the Columbus Day parades was Rich Daley. I would just say,
Yeah. Because of all those trucks.
Yes.
That would show up at Jeff, all those trucks that would show up at, you know, during the, in the scandals of the hired trucks, they would show up and Dominic DeFrisco would announce them all the, you know, Dominic who's doing the PR or whatever, the announcing of it. It was just bizarre, but there is no Columbus Day statue. I don't know. Where are they, guys? Are they in the...
They ripped down 33 of them. It's like terrible all over the place. I mean, it's horrible. And the 33 statues are just the tip of the iceberg. All these other statues and historical monuments, suddenly you don't need government anymore. You just get a bunch of people with tar and feather and they single something out. Half of them don't even know the history of what they're talking about. And then they pull a statue down.
Like the ones I put in the picture on your column.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Which got a lot of comment. I got to say, your Facebook page was reminded me of the most heated moments during the council wars between Washington and and Fratoliak.
Well, we were there, and we'll get into that.
Yeah.
We'll get into that, but
yes.
But first, you should know something about Ray Hinnia. Ray was he was the author of the Grapevine column at the Southtown when I was breaking in at the Daily Calumet. We were community newspaper reporters into the micro politics of our beats. Ray on the Southwest side and South suburbs, and I was from the Southwest side, but I couldn't get a job there. So I ended up on the East side. People thought I was an East sider, which I wasn't. But
yeah, you did some great writing over there at the Daily Calumet.
Crazy times.
And then at the Tribune too. You Ray, shook that paper up.
Yeah, they shook me up too at the end, Ray. And then and then Ray moved on to the Sun-Times. I moved on to the Tribune. But I don't want to lose the string of this.
Right.
Why is Columbus Day important, and why are they trying to destroy it?
Well, it's politics. You know, race politics has become a powerful weapon, more so today than it was before. If you can point to somebody and accuse them of some form of racism, you don't have to address the issues anymore. You just talk about the personality. And you rally the troops based on race and minority status or, you know, your political agenda. And the media tends to, I don't know, they thrive off of it more today than they did before. I mean, it's not like race in Chicago is a new thing, right? Race has always been a part of Chicago politics, but never such a powerful influence as it is today, in a bad way, too.
So, Ray, I mean, the column, which, you know, everyone needs to get on johncastnews.com, is fantastic. And in reading it, you describe this idea where a minority group, and not in an ethnic or racial sense, but in the size or scope of where they are in our society, you know, takes it upon themselves to tear down what they feel is some sort of, you know, affront to what is democracy, quote unquote. And the irony there, it struck me as like this Salem witch trial kind of thing, because it's, you know, grab your pitchfork and run towards the thing you don't like and tear it down. And it used to be, and maybe I'm crazy, but it used to be you would build up something. You'd put up a statue of a Columbus if you're an Italian and you feel marginalized and attacked. Where do we change that? How do we get to that idea now that it's the minority group that comes after and changes everything?
Well, like you say, when I'm using the term minority and we are using the term minority, I'm not referring to people, you know, of ethnicity or race or, you know, color or nationality. I'm talking about voting minorities. You get small groups of voters who don't like what they see. They're in the democratic process. They can't win a majority because the majority of people don't support their views. So they decide to turn to a weapon of, you know, using race and emotion and anger to create a new, force of a small group of people who can control the majority of people and go out and bully people and intimidate you with, you know, accusing you of being a racist, that saying that, you know, that you've, you know, done terrible things to their, you know, whatever their group is. And they get people on the street. And instead of having a government that defends democracy, we have a mayor in Chicago and in other cities that bends to it and says, yeah, democracy only means something when I want to get elected. But now that I'm elected, I don't need it anymore. So she goes and she tears down the Columbus statue.
What a coward.
It was. It was like, stand up for democracy. That's what got everybody their power and their rights. You know, you take away democracy and it's tar and feathering. Come on. It's terrible. It really is.
We're speaking with my friend, Ray, our friend, Ray Hanania, columnist, longtime columnist and newsman in Chicago, former City Hall reporter, now running his own website called SuburbanChicagoland.com. And I reprinted his column, Columbus Day is Democracy and Challenge to the Tyranny We Face, on John Cass News. I'd like to ask you guys both to respond to this quote written by a guy named George, who was a socialist in England years ago. He wrote, Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. George Orwell, 1984. Isn't that what they're doing? They're deconstructing, they're tearing down statues so that, or whatever the symbolism is, they're deconstructing the family, they're deconstructing human sexuality. Now you can have 54 genders. I thought there were only two according to biologists, but I guess they don't want to follow the science.
They have their own newspeak now.
Yeah, they have their own newspeak, and they're basically tearing down what they can to destroy. It's a Marxist, neo-Jacobin, neo-Marxist, whatever you want to call it, approach to public discourse. And it's kind of like, actually, if you look at history, my own personal history, it's like 10 years before I was born. 1946 in Greece, when the communists, a small percentage of the people, with Stalin's help, took over the country for a bit until Churchill brought in the tanks. And my father fought on the side with Churchill and the king. And they have never forgotten it. That's why they hate Churchill so much. But that's what they're doing. It's happening everywhere.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting, that history that you just brought up is so important. My dad and my uncle, right after Pearl Harbor, enlisted in the military. They'd been immigrants from the Middle East, became citizens the hard way, you know, embraced America, served in the OSS, you know, my dad in the OSS and my uncle on a battleship for 4 years in the North Atlantic. And suddenly that's minimized. It's like it didn't mean anything. What were we fighting for? You know, it's like to tear down a statue is almost the same kind of repression that they were trying to impose on us, that they tried to impose on Europe. It really is the same thing. But obviously, it's more dramatic, you know, talking about World War II and what was done in Europe than it is tearing down a statue. But tearing down that statue without the
due process.
Right. The due process of public discussion is wrong. It's terribly wrong. And it's the worst kind of attack against democracy.
And just like in the old days, gentlemen, with fascism, now we have, there was at that time in the early 30s and middle 30s and later, there were news organizations that supported the fascists. And now we have news organizations here in this country that spit on people of goodwill by mocking them, by calling them, they call them the fascists when they're the authoritarian juvenile.
They redefined the word fascism into something acceptable. They've respelled it. They've redefined it. You're not allowed to. You say something they don't like. You know, like if I say something on Facebook that, you know, votes were stolen, I can't believe the media argues. And I don't want to segue into Trump or any of this other stuff. But no. I've never heard the media before until recently claim that there was no vote theft in an election. Stealing a vote.
We're from Chicago. Like,
exactly. Right? It's like if a vote isn't stolen, I wonder if an election actually took place.
And that brings us to back to the old days, okay? Because I just want to go here.
Yeah.
I said in the monologue that Rehan Ania, Jeff, said the your most important declarative sentence in my career. It was years ago. He was sitting behind me. We had little desks in the City Hall press room. I'll just paint the picture. Ashtrays full of cigarettes. People are smoking. There's one reporter who's still working, not Ray, not me, who was going through ashtrays to find cigarette butts to smoke. Okay. And he's still out there. So I'm just saying, kind of creepy. We wore suits in those days, suspenders.
Yep.
Armani. It was, you know, we looked good. And Ray shouts out on the PAX phone. He picks up the PAX phone. And he shouts out over my shoulder to this old, wizened old man from the Sun-Times, Harry Golden, sitting in the corner. He says, "Harry, Al Mutter's on the phone." And as soon as I heard that, I looked at Harry, and Harry looked at me. We locked eyes. I think Ray knows what happened here. We locked eyes, and he leaves the room and goes down the corridor, at which point I call my source at the clerk's office, who starts screaming, I've got Basil Talbot, Lynn Sweet, other reporters from the Sun-Times wanting the files on Clarence McClain that you have.
Right.
What am I supposed to do? Right. And he said, and I said, well, just tell him you have to recreate the files, microfiche, something like that, you know? And then I went over to the Tribune and said, hey, I've been being screwed by the Sun-Times, and let's talk. Ray,
they were trying to steal your story. It was a big story. The idea that a small, new, young reporter from a community press would get it was insulting to some of those guys. And there was a time when they would keep community newspapers out of the City Hall press room. They wouldn't allow them in.
Right.
And but your story was a change story. It really changed. It was the beginning of a turning a corner in politics.
But it was about the late and bewigged former pimp and top advisor to Harold Washington, Clarence McClain, whose funeral I attended or wake. And I just have to say that, they didn't want to deal with the fact that Harold Washington, their icon,
right,
would have a pimp and slumlord as his top aide.
Yeah, it was a strange culture that he brought to City Hall. I remember it was very confrontational. I mean, even more so than when Jane Byrne came into office. Jane Byrne was a secular kind of confrontation. Political confrontation.
Right.
You know, when she didn't like the media, she stuffed the press room with desks so you couldn't even walk in the room. There were like 30 desks in that little City Hall press room just to punish us. And then Washington comes in and he has his press conferences out in what he said was the hood. And he said, hey, how many of you have ever been to the hood?
That's nothing, you know, just like, you know, getting the white radio guys all nervous.
Yeah.
You know, all you get to do is say, was drop the race card on the radio guys, and they'd start freaking out, stammering.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, you didn't know how to handle it. I don't know. And I remember that Washington always coming up to me, and he'd go, you know, you're an Arab, you're not white. And I go, I don't know. I said, white people think I'm dark. Dark people think I'm white. I don't know. Who cares?
He'd say the same thing about me.
Yeah, because you're Greek.
He's like, you're Greek, you're not white. I'm like, of course I'm not white. I was only white when Jackie Onassis married Aristotle Onassis.
Then they made us white.
That's
but,
right.
But before that, Harold would be like, I mean, after that, Harold would say, you're not white, just like he said to you. I guess politics is all about, in some respects, all about tribalism. And yeah. The politician is trying to get people around him.
Listen, you know? Verdoliak probably was the only one who understood that racism wasn't really racism. He didn't hate people. Racism was an instrument of politics. If you played it the right way, it was just like, money, campaign contributions. It was just like forming coalitions. You know, race was one of those factors because Chicago was a racial city.
Tribal.
And we were proud of it, right? I mean, white communities, Polish communities, Italian communities, black communities, Hispanic communities. We wanted that race identity. I mean, they created a whole Hispanic, you know, congressional district for Luis Gutierrez by bringing in two separate little enclaves on the north side and the south side and connecting it by an umbilical cord just to give you a Hispanic identity, right?
Right.
That's what we fought for. And now suddenly it's being turned on its head in a bad way.
Okay, where do we stand now? Because in the monologue, mm-hmm. I brought up one of my favorite actresses, Tina Turner, who, played Anti-Entity in Thunderdome and Mad Max and had this amazing plan that to keep order in a barbaric town called Bartertown, she had the Thunderdome. So if you wanted to, you know, kill each other or fight, you had to go in there. And I'm wondering, isn't that what mutual combatants is all about? Where they keep saying, oh, yeah, they shot this lady in the middle. And she was driving in the middle on the Dan Ryan. But really, they were mutual combatants. Or they shot each other up on the west side. Kim Fox doesn't want to charge, but mutual combatants.
The gunfight at the OK Corral on the west side of Chicago. Unbelievable. 72 empty bullet casings all over the place. One person gets killed. How many people are injured?
Yeah.
And the attitude under the old days, it would be you go in, you grab everybody, and you beat the crap out of them and figure out what's going on for the safety of the majority of people. Now
I'm not for beating the crap out of people, but I am for sweating people.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's a phrase that I use. That right. You pressure people. You intimidate criminals. You stand up to the criminal. You don't cower, you know, and look weak. You have to be tougher than the criminal, and you go up to as far as you can. But the point is now it's like, I don't know who started the fight. Let's find something else. I don't think crime has ever been this bad ever in the city of Chicago. And I think it's because it's an attitude. It's like a signal to the criminals. You want to commit a crime. What's the best place to go to commit a crime and get away with it?
Chicago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the worst message to put out there, isn't it? We should be trying to counter that.
I called one of the Democratic old timers to ask him about, and this guy was at the top levels of government. You know him, but I'm not going to mention him. And I asked him, the re-election of Kim Fox and the capitulation by the Republican Party of not having a strong candidate to go against her and all the rest of it, you know, Lori Lightfoot endorsing Fox, Tony Preckwinkle endorsing her protege, all this. What did it mean? What does it mean to the people of the city of Chicago? And this old timer said, he's really not old, but he said, what does it mean? He said, it means get the f*** out. That's what it means. And in a way, I don't want to believe he's right, but the way I see it now, I don't understand. I just can't put my arms around it, Jeff and Ray.
Yeah, it goes back to people who can't win using the system that we've been using, a fair system, want to change the game in the middle of the game. They want to throw the game board out, start a new game with their rules based on what they believe based on what will help them. And anything that helps them becomes a rule that they process. And the sad part is, it used to be that the news media would put that in check. You would expose that. But today, the media is almost partisan. I don't know, you know, I don't know if we really have news anymore. We have opinion, you know, about what's happening. I remember covering City Hall. I wrote an opinion column, you know, the Grapevine.
Right.
Love and that. Then I wrote news stories, five news stories a day. And those news stories, they had to be balanced and fair and include things that I agreed with or didn't agree with.
Right.
We don't get that today.
Yeah, that balance is dead. I mean, you see it, even people who you'd expect better from who've been around for a long time get sucked into these traps where it's a half-assed quote from someone on an opposing view, or it's a spokesperson versus a prime source. Like, they're just these weird shades of it. And it's just deteriorates people's worldview about what is, you know, what's the right and what's wrong, whether they realize it or not. You know, they're getting fed the slant, and they don't even get exposed to the other side of an equation or a story. And it's brutal. And I don't know that it's in mainstream media as much as it's in our, like, say Chicago, like stuff we see on the news at night and stuff. And that's all driven by interest and clicks and all that crap. And no one gets into it, but I don't know, you know, where we go to fix it. I just don't, that's the future. I don't understand.
It's not just inserting opinion in the news, straight news stories, which they do. It's ignoring stories that would otherwise affect their points of view, which they do. So it's like, omission, not only commission. Yeah. For example, I'll give you one. Tony Preckwinkle, her detail shoots a 19-year-old kid outside their house, outside her house, in an attempted carjack. The city of Chicago keeps it quiet. Preckwinkle keeps it quiet. Where are the editorials? Where are the columns on it? Where are the stories on it? I'm not trying to go after Tony. She's a big girl, tough politician, probably one of the smarter ones around, and ran into an Ed Burke problem when she was running last time for mayor. But, you know, she's a smart operator. So where are the editorials saying, wagging the fingers, like, you know, like we do on Jean-Baptiste Dusable Day?
And, you know, we used to define tough politics by how they could take the criticism.
Right.
So, you know, if I were in politics, I'd want to be criticized because I could stand it. And
no, you wouldn't.
Well, listen, I've been criticized.
Really, you haven't. Yes, you have.
But I don't mind. I don't mind. I'm telling you, criticism is a good thing. But the whole point of this, the worst part of what the media is doing is it's disrespecting the public, because they treat you, the public, like they're stupid, like we don't know what's going on. I think the majority of people read the news and realize that it's really not news. It's political opinion and we're being told this is what we should think. And they think the public's stupid and they'll just believe whatever they're told. I think the public's smart, and I think they see through this. That's why I think you're doing so well. The response I got when you posted my column was huge. I'm going, wow, this is phenomenal. That tells me that there are a lot of people out there that are not happy. A lot of people with the way the media is acting.
The Chicago Way and JohnCastNews.com thing is a no chumbalone zone. Okay. We don't allow people to act like idiots, only to mock them, but we don't allow them to BS us. And I find that, okay, for an example, if a reporter, a columnist, you know, with all the crime going on and all they're mutual combatants, and I'm not going to charge the guy on the video who, like, shot the woman or punch the woman out on the L or whatever. It's going on and on again and again, day after day. And if a columnist says, you know what,
this prosecutor, Kim Fox, was backed by George Soros, who's doing the same thing in other states, in New York, in Philadelphia, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco,
Minneapolis.
And if you if a columnist mentioned that, he might be run out by his Jacobin news union.
Right.
Is there a possibility? am I exaggerating?
No,
because
you're not.
It's my life.
Yes. Yeah. And I got to tell you, I thought George Soros was Greek. Honestly,
me too. I was hoping he was Greek.
I thought he was Greek, and all of a sudden, all that ridiculous, you know, the demonization when they can't beat you on the facts, they demonize you.
Right.
They attack you personally. They call you names, anti-Semitic, or, you know, right. you're a racist, or you're right. this, or you're that. Because right. they can't beat, when they do that, you know you won, because they can't beat you on the facts.
Well, I won because I left rather than have to look over my shoulder every 5 seconds in my own newsroom. And I won because I started JohnCastNews.com, and because people like you, Ray, and Jay Levine, and others, John McCormick and others are coming to write for it. So that's the important thing. But I think I feel a sense of loss for, and I think Jeff does too, because he's still in the, you know, the media, as I am, I guess, and you are too, Ray, for the kind of division between opinion writing and news writing.
Yeah.
Ray, how did you do that? How did you write the Grapevine column on Sunday with all these great stories like the bucket of blood fight with Aloysius Majerczyk outside the
Warlord.
The warlord outside the Polish Highlanders Hall with the wedding and everybody fighting. I love that stuff. And then you'd write straight news during the week.
These guys, listen, back then, it wasn't a personal thing. You break a story, and, you know, like the Grapevine was actually just an idea. There was so much news at City Hall. You know, when the publisher at the Southtown stood up, and when Bolandic was mayor, he said, "Who wants to go to City Hall?" Everybody ducked. I had just been hired. I was the only goof there going, "City Hall? What's that?" So they said, "Okay, you're going to City Hall." It was the most boring beat in the city. And then I luck out. 8 months later, Jane Byrne topples the machine, comes in, becomes a machine, and I'm in the middle of this whirlpool like you, what you got down there.
Right.
And we find 10, 15 stories a day. Some stories we couldn't write, so you had to have a column to kind of put it in there. And it was part of the system. It wasn't so much opinion to knock somebody. People be up and down in the column all the time. But today it's different. Today, you know, people are, they just want to attack you. They don't like what you say. So they don't want to argue against what you say. They want to call you a name. And that's what they're doing. And the media doesn't call that out. The media empowers that. And they shouldn't be doing that.
That's the problem. That's why they're losing market share every day. And that's why people are going to, I think the savior of journalism is independent journalism, non-corporate legacy journalism. Until they turn it around, they're not going to have a product that people want. But tell us, in the few remaining minutes we have left, tell us what it was like, because I don't want to be Mr. Old Guy telling the stories. Tell us what it was like, the real story of the press room with, you know, all the squabbles and fights and Franny and Bill Cameron and Bob Davis sleeping on that couch. I don't know how he could sit on that couch. It was like the filthiest. It was like going to a carpet at Motel 8.
We had the most racist board up on the wall.
Yeah.
That, you know, they'd take pictures from the paper and they'd write the most racist things.
I didn't write those.
No, I know. I couldn't, because I hadn't been there long enough. I was still a junior in the media army, but everybody, all the people that came in and denounced racism and denounced misogyny and sexism and all that, they were there laughing. And, you know, because it was in an enclosed environment, nobody could see them. They were doing all the things that when they stepped out of the room, they would start, you know, judging everybody else. But when they came in that room, it was pure discussion, no limits. And what would come out of it would be a better understanding of what the world was really like. As soon as you start putting restrictions on what you can say and what you can think, and that's what they started doing, you couldn't really come to what the real essence of a story was. You can only come to the essence of what the political, you know, power was, wanted that story to be. But the one thing I'll always remember is the first day I stepped in the press room and Bob Davis brought me in, and this is like in 1977, and he opens his desk and he says, and he shows me the silver key, and he goes, "This key is the most important thing in this room." And I'm going, "Wow, what is it for?" And he looks around and he gets up off his desk and he waddles over to this big TV box. It was a wood box that looked like it had a TV inside, and it was locked. And he took the key and he opened the lock and he pulled the door open. And instead of a TV, there were like 120 bottles of Crown Royal and Stolich Naya and all these scotch and wine that the aldermen would bring in and throw on the reporters at Christmas time.
What about the porn TV that we had?
Geez, I can't remember the name of it.
Freddie Rohde, you know, I guess he knew some guys.
Yes.
And a big TV fell off a truck. Our old TV broke.
Oh, yeah,
and so,
right.
And so he brought it in. He didn't even bring it in. He didn't carry it in, like roll his sleeves
up. Yeah, he had people bring it in.
He had some guys on the city.
City workers.
City workers brought it
in. Union.
And it had like, it didn't have pictures for porn. It was a regular TV with regular stations, but there was one channel. If you turned it to one channel, you got
on the TV, sound, I think it was called.
You got the soundtrack for porn.
Right. Oh, and it was a split screen where you couldn't see it, but you could almost make something out. Yeah. Listen, those are the days when you knew somebody was in the mob, right? You knew these weren't actual ruffians who, you know, did the, you know, breaking arms or doing all the stuff on the street. These were like their political reps that were hanging out at City Hall. You could talk to them because that was the real world. And you got to understand what the real world was really about. And that's what made it so good. Today, we're not allowed to talk about the real world. And if you talk about the real world, you're going to be criticized. So we don't get a real picture of what the real world is like because, oh, we don't like this guy. We don't want Columbus anymore. Let's not talk about what happened during the Civil War. Let's not talk about, you know, all the businesses that were burned down or looted during the, you know, George Floyd riots in 2020. Let's not talk about this stuff. Let's just talk about what we want you to talk about. And it's a lie. It becomes a lie.
George Floyd wasn't a drugged up thief. He was a hero. He was an altar boy, you know.
I had an Arab store owner. There were 10 Arab businesses that were destroyed. Nobody cared about. Two of them were burned down during that thing. And the police told the owners as they watched people looting the stores that we were told we can't do anything. We don't want to create a confrontation. They would paint George Floyd's picture on the side of the burned down Arab store building. And I remember one of the Arab store owners calling me, goes, "You know, I work in the community. The people here love me. I help them. I do everything for them. And then a few people I've never seen before destroy everything and nobody does anything about it." It was the worst kind of frustration I'd ever seen.
Well, guys, Lori Lightfoot sat down or stepped back. She stepped off the corner. She stepped off because in every city in America, Democratic mayors, in my opinion, and I reflected this in a column in the New York Post that's running my column, that they wanted the voters whipped up for the 2020 election. And George Floyd protests, riots, looting was part of that. And so they just let it happen.
Yep.
And they got what they wanted. They got what they paid for.
Yeah,
that's sad.
It is.
So Ray's talking about some kind of lamb competition.
What's going on with
lamb competition?
Yeah, because I know the Arabs roast lamb far better than the Greeks. I think the Greeks pretty much stole all our food, you know. And although, honestly, we're all from the same region, Greeks and Arabs. And I
Levant.
Think. Yeah.
Greeks? Well, you should tell people. People think, you're such a hater. Levant is you know, has people all from all over.
Yes.
Israel, Greece. Yes. All of them. Syria, North, everything.
And roasted lamb is a big deal. And I think we should have a roasted lamb contest every year to see who can cook the best roast lamb. I think it'd be a more modern reflection of today instead of a chili contest, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
In the past.
We could break unleavened bread on a around a table.
And, over each other's heads. All right. And not be offended by it.
If you want to find out more about Ray Hanania, go to Ray. Tell us how to get to you and how to reach your various sites. And
the main website is suburbanchicagoland.com.
And also, go on.
No, I was going to say, and you know, I write on Middle East issues too for the Arab news and, you know, Saudi Arabia. They're always amazed by American politics. Nobody can understand it. It's so shocking. To them. And I have my own personal webpage at Hanania.com.
And Ray's going to help me try to get more media presence. He knows how to do the, he knows the tricks.
The learning, the best thing that happened to me when I left City Hall in 1992 was it forced me to stand on my own 2 feet. And I ended up learning more and more about computers and writing and freelancing and, you know, networking. And I think it, because I got a small website compared to yours, but I was able to get it indexed. And those news stories, you know, spread out all over. So I want to help you do that because I think your website, johncastnews.com, really can be a major media player. It is a major media player and it can be even bigger. And thanks for putting my column there.
It was a great column.
Great column, yeah.
Thank you.
And by the way, for those who say you're such a hater, you know, because you're an Arab, you hate Jews and all that. Can you explain how your life is? You know, how's your life?
My wife is Jewish. My son is Jewish. We had a bar mitzvah for my son when he was 14. He's now a junior in college, Aaron. And we had Arabs and Jews at the bar mitzvah enjoying each other because the truth is when you strip away the politics, we really get along. And if we could just get rid of that angry politics, you'd see a lot of the majority coming together. So I think I got a great life, Palestinian married to a Jewish wife.
And also there's another thing that's to the haters. Another thing that I think that many of the Protestants who are in the Republican camp should understand, the evangelists, that there were Christians there.
Oh yeah,
in the Middle East before 1950.
Yes, I come from a big Christian family from Jerusalem and Bethlehem. My cousin is the pastor of the Church of the Nativity, Greek Orthodox. And John, when you go to the Middle East and you go to Bethlehem and you want to go to the Church of the Nativity where Jesus was born, you tell him that you know me. He will empty out the church for you and give you a personal tour. I'm telling you, he will.
Thanks, Ray.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You're the best.
And thanks, Ray. Happy Columbus Day, buddy.
Happy Columbus Day. And in the old days, we'd be sitting at a Columbus Day, pre-Columbus Day dinner.
Yep.
Or like reception outside City Hall. And we'd just be trying to figure out what we're going to write besides Columbus Day. eating the noshing on the whatever the stuff was.
The Italian.
And all of a sudden, there would be a crazy little dwarf that would come up from behind us and say, hey, guys, like he wanted to hang out.
You were in the hall of City Hall in front of the fifth floor munching. And, you know, I think it was some little celebration. Maybe it was Columbus Day. Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah. And all of a sudden, the hair on the back of our neck stood up, not in a scary way, but in a weird, like, what's going on? We both turned around. I looked to the left. You looked to the right. And right in the middle, as we turned around, was Rich Daly just kind of standing there. Like, and we're going, nobody wants to talk to this guy. He's the mayor.
Oh, my gosh.
He wanted to hang out with somebody. He was kind of like, and outs. He felt like an, I don't know, at one time he was an outsider.
Total little brother thing going on right there. Yeah. That was little brother. We little brothered the mayor of Chicago.
Yes, we did. And he enjoyed it. We had fun with him. Eating strawberries at the table.
Different times.
All right, guys. All right, thank you so much. Ray. It was an honor. Thanks, Ray. A lot of fun.
Thank you.
All right.
For Ray Hanania, columnist, journalist, longtime City Hall reporter, and now proprietor of his own website, suburbanchicagoland.com. Ray wrote an excellent piece that the left, the trolls hate, on johncastnews.com on Columbus Day. And for Jeff Carlin, my friend, co-host here, executive producer at WGN Radio. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncastnews.com. Also, they picked it up in the New York Post, and that was pretty cool. Join us again, won't you, for another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.